The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
On. It is the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, back in the hot seat, of course. I was not here last week. I let Miles Blumsen take over, but for 1 week only, of course. We're with you for the next hour discussing all things the Red Devils. Plenty coming up. We're going to speak to Andy Ritchie in a moment or two. We've got ex-United goalkeeper Paul Rychubka on the line. He's going to discuss the last time Man United went on an extended winter break, all the way back in the early noughties, of course, for that inaugural FIFA World Club Championship. Some great stories that he has to tell on that particular trip over to Rio. The enduring images of David Beckham on the beach with his top off, not really thinking about the Premier League, but getting sent off, of course, in that opening game against Necaxa. Wasn't really the best trip for Manchester United, was it? But it wasn't bad for Rychubka. He played in the only win over South Melbourne and just recalls his time as an up-and-coming goalkeeper at Manchester United, wanting to take the mantle from Peter Schmeichel, not quite being able to do so, but actually having a pretty good record. People often talk about that record held by Nick Colkin, who came on in that game with Arsenal, pretty much one kick, no shots faced, and a clean sheet, 100% record for him. I believe it is pretty close from Paul Rychubka too. So he's coming up later on in the show. We're going to be discussing Odion Ighalo. Of course we are. Why wouldn't we be? There is a fear, of course, United are in Marbella at the moment, but after signing for the club on deadline day, he's having to miss that training camp because of fears the coronavirus outbreak could lead him to being refused entry back into the UK. Another layer on that story there with Odion Ighalo. We're also going to be discussing the reports that United have attempted to sue the Sun over the attack on Ed Woodward's home. Kelvin McKenzie will be on the line there. He was discussing that on Weekend Breakfast just yesterday. But first, I am delighted to say I'm joined by ex-Manchester United striker Andy Ritchie. Hello, Andy.
Hello, evening. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Great to have you on the show. Now, I believe it's been nearly a month since you last came on. And in that time, it's been contrasting fortunes for United. There was the home defeat to Burnley. There was the resounding win away at Tranmere in the FA Cup. Of course, a big win in the EFL Cup against Manchester City and the 0-0 draw with Wolves. So it's been a bit up and down since then.
I think that's the season so far, isn't it? It's been up and down and good little spurts of three, we've got on the spin, and then you're losing again. And I think the one that you mentioned there, the big one, was probably the Burnley game. You know, getting beaten there was a hammer blow because Chelsea are trying to throw it towards us and we keep throwing it back at them. And to get 3 points would have been essential there. And then again, trying to get the 3 points against Wolves, and it didn't happen. It's just been one of those seasons, like you say, up and down.
It has indeed. And Sheffield United's win as well today, kind of rubber stamping their intent to actually, realistically, go for those Champions League spots. So it's going to be quite the run-in from now until the end of the campaign. I just want to touch on the reaction towards Manchester United from your perspective, Andy? Because I'm constantly defending the club, defending the players, defending Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on this show. And what aggravates me is that we kind of know the deal at the moment. We know the situation. We know the players. We know the way it is. We know the way that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to play. We know that it's going to be inconsistent. That's just, unfortunately, the way it is. And you can talk about football going in cycles and the fact that Liverpool now might go on, you know, quite the run under Jurgen Klopp. But we have to accept that it is the way it is. Either stop supporting the club or stop moaning, because we know that there's going to be a win, like there was against Manchester City. Brilliant win away in the EFL Cup. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is now one of just two managers to beat Pep Guardiola on his own patch in two successive games. So do you think there needs to come a time where everybody goes, do you know what? We know the way it is. It's going to take a bit of time, and we've got to give Ole that time.
Well, I keep saying that, and I think that the problem is that it's Manchester United. Nobody is going to let it drop. Nobody's going to let it be an easy ride, because the press and everybody else loves to see us suffering, and that's just the way it's going to be. You know, it's definitely for me the right way to go, and I'm not just towing the party line there. I definitely do think that the strategy that they've got at the football club is the right way to go, to bring in younger players, to bring in people, though, that want to play for the football club, that have got the football club in the veins, if you like, or if they haven't quite got it in there now, they will do in a very short space of time. It'll be drummed into them. And I think that you've got to give Ole the time to do that. You can't change people's minds overnight. You can't change players' minds overnight. You can't get them into the way that you want them to be overnight. So it's going to be a process. And it, unfortunately, I think it's going to be a long process.
It is indeed. And there is a glimmer of hope on the horizon, of course. The next game is Chelsea. That's next Monday, 17th of February. But that glimmer of hope I'm describing is a 30-year-old Nigerian. He's flown over from China. He's taken a pay cut. He confesses to being a boyhood Manchester United fan. Ode Onoghalo is in the house, Andy. You are an ex-Manchester United striker. One, what do you make of this signing? And two, do you think it's going to pay off?
Well, time will tell. He might be in the house, but he's not in Spain, unfortunately, because of this coronavirus. And I know he's fine, you know, he's been checked out. But the problem is, I think that they might not let him back in if he went out to Spain again. So he's had to do his training back here with one or two of the other players, maybe the younger players. Listen, you've just said he's got... This is. I know he's the wrong age group for what we're looking at in terms of that. And I think the club have come out and said that. Listen, you know, we're not looking at that age. We're looking younger. But we needed someone desperately. Obviously, Marcus Rashford's out for a while. We need somebody to give other people a rest. But what I'm talking about is that love of Manchester United, that wanting to play for Manchester United, he has got it in absolute abundance. Now, that for me means he is going to work his butt off every single time he puts that shirt on and goes onto that pitch for Manchester United. And that's what we need. That is what we need in the football club. And I just hope that it works out for him, because he's such a Man United fan that he's going to fight for that badge.
Yeah, long live the Iggy Chop. Can't wait to see that in force at Manchester United over the course of the next...
I do remember, though, you know, when he was, I know he's been out of the Premier League for a while, but when he was at Watford alongside Troy Deeney, the two of those were horrible to play against. They never gave the defences a moment's peace. You know, he can score goals, he's pacey, he can hold the ball up, and that is exactly what we need at the moment. We need somebody that can really hold that ball up, bring others into play and give us that little bit of a respite where, you know, I've been a bit critical myself, and that it's coming straight back at us sometimes. And I think we need somebody with a bit of strength to hold that ball up.
Completely agree. It's just whether he's got the man alongside him, of course. The likes of Mason Greenwood is there, the likes of Anthony Martial as well. Fingers crossed, Andy, this one will work out. Now, I said that, you know, it is until the 17th of February that United are next in action. So we've got a bit of a midwinter break. And as I said to you before you came on air, Andy, you've been on the show many times now, but we've never really discussed your time at the club. You were with United for a few years across 77 to 80. Now, we have currently a series on Love Sport, Barclay and Barton on a post-war history of Manchester United. That is with Paddy Barclay. Of course, Patrick Barclay, the renowned sports journalist, and Wayne Barton, United historian and author. And they have been chronicling United's path from post-war, post-Second World War, all the way up to now. Now, a couple of shows we've already done focus on Busby and Murphy. There was one on the transition into Wilf McGuinness and Frank O'Farrell, and then Tommy Dock, of course. And then there was an episode on Tommy Dock, the transition into Dave Sexton, and eventually Ron Atkinson. That was pretty much your era, wasn't it?
It was. When I first signed on as a schoolboy in 1975, the Dock was manager, and I got to meet him a couple of times, he didn't really stay on that long because of obviously what went on with himself and the physio, his wife. So we'll skip over that.
Yeah, we'll gloss over it. We talk about it in the show, so we don't need to go into it again.
And then obviously Dave Sexton came in, and that was Dave was the manager to give my first full team debut. And you know, from a boy growing up and being born in Manchester to play for your hometown club and the club you supported as a boy was just it's a cliche, but it is a dream come true.
And in terms of where the club is now compared to where it was then, I know that football has changed, and I know that the club has changed. You like to think the core principles are still there, and that is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course, is trying to instill at the club. What changes do you see from when you were at United, and of course the Cliff, and now we have Carrington? Those are two drastic changes that the club has overseen in the past 10, 20 years or so. But changes for you, Andy, from then and now?
Well, you've listed a few of them. Obviously, the ground has changed a little bit as well. It's grown in capacity. The pitch is so different from what I used to play on. You know, towards the end of the season, there was like a triangle of dust in the middle and four patches of green in the corners towards the end of the season. Now it's just totally uniform throughout the season, isn't it, with these lamps and tricking the grass into thinking it's summer all year round. The training pitches, obviously, we were down at the Cliff. We had one training pitch, the indoor gym, which was red gravel, by the way, then. None of this 3G and 4G stuff. So the club as a whole has changed. It's grown, even though it was a massive, massive football club, loved by everybody and still is, and a massive pull all over the world. It's grown even bigger in terms of the actual brand as well as and that's not just Manchester United. It's every football club has grown in that aspect. But I think, as you've said, you just want to retain those core things that, you know, the Busby Babes were what everybody thought of Manchester United, and that was young players coming through the system, and you know that has happened and gone all the way through from way beyond when I was a player there. But just the enormity of playing for Manchester United and being associated with it was just fantastic.
In the time that you were at the club as well, I know there was a cup final in 77. That was towards the end of Tommy Dock's time, of course. There was the cup win in 79 as well, that epic FA Cup final with Arsenal. Trophies weren't hugely forthcoming. Of course, earlier on in the 70s, the club had gone down to the second division at the time, came straight back up under Tommy Dock. But the fans' perception of what was going on then, it was a rebuilding phase, and Tommy Docherty managed to succeed in doing that extremely well before Sexton and then Ron Atkinson, and more cup finals followed in 80, and then Sir Alex Ferguson came in, and the rest is history. But that period for the club where it wasn't title after title, what was the reaction from the fans like then?
I think from what I can you know, sort of gather. They rode with it, you know, and it was one of those things that, right, listen, we, whatever comes or goes, you get behind the football club. They used to take, you know, thousands to away games, and you know, it was just one of those, like, right, okay, we're not having the best of times at the moment, but listen, they're our club, they're our players, we'll get behind them, and we'll do whatever we can to help them when they are on that football pitch. That's the biggest thing that I can remember of those tough times. And, you know, I think that's what your job is as a football club, as a football fan. But, you know, you've just got to take the rough with the smooth sometimes, and you've got to get behind people.
And in terms of your memories, Andy, of your time at the club, I mean, you played with some great players, of course, the likes of, you know, Martin Buchan, brilliant player, Steve Coppell and Gordon Hill on either side, of course, Lou Macari was there, Joe Jordan, to name but a few. Matches, moments, is there anything that really sticks out for you?
Oh, God. Well, obviously your debut. My debut was 1977, Boxing Day, at Goodison Park against Everton, and we won that game 6-2, I think it was, in the end. We weren't expected to win it. We were at the wrong end of the table that season. They were up the top, and we managed to beat them. I managed, very lucky to, like you say, to play with some fantastic footballers. I'm one of the best footballers, if not the best. Well, I would say he was the best player I've ever played with. Sadly, he's not with us now, Ray Wilkins as well. So I had all those memories, and then to top it all off, I managed to get two hat-tricks at Old Trafford, one against Leeds and one against Spurs. Funnily enough, the fans remember the Leeds one more than the Spurs one.
There's a shock.
I wonder why that is.
And just to finish, Andy, because I want to touch on this. It's one of my earlier football memories. I don't know about you. Nowadays, I cannot stand it when players tend to give a muted celebration when they score a goal against their former club. I understand, like when Cristiano Ronaldo first came back to Old Trafford for Real Madrid, scored in the Champions League, didn't celebrate it. He was a legend of the club. But if you've had a loan spell at a club, if you spent a couple of years there and then you've moved on, I think it actually shows massive disrespect to the team that you're playing for if you don't celebrate. What I love about you, Andy, is that I recall an FA Cup semi-final replay in 1990. You equalise for Oldham against Manchester United and you go potty.
Well, I actually, the first game back for Brighton, when I played for Brighton after leaving Manchester United, which was probably the season after, I came back to Old Trafford and was lucky enough to score. And I went absolutely crackers then. the way I was feeling in that instance was, I wanted to show Dave Sexton what he was missing, if you like. That was my feeling. And I think I may have run past the dugout and sort of given a little bit of a gesture as well. I just felt, listen, when I scored a goal, it was the best thing for me, as obviously being a striker. I didn't care who it was against. I just wanted to celebrate the goal and celebrate with my teammates. And I do share your view at times that, you know, it can be a little bit disrespectful to who you're playing for as well, to the fans that are now backing you, not to celebrate. You don't maybe have to go running around the pitch and, you know, taking your shirt off and throwing it around, but show a bit of you know, that you love scoring goals. I've always done that. Still do it now when I'm ambling around the five-a-side pitch.
Do you still get out there? Do you, Andy? Still play?
I still do. Yeah, I've moved on to. I sometimes break into an amble now, I still love playing, and if I manage to get a game now, because I'm maybe not as mobile as I was, I'll certainly play. I'm not yet at the walking football stage, but it's coming rapidly.
Andy, great talking to you, mate. Really, really have enjoyed this. Thanks so much for coming
on. Not a problem.
I love that. Andy Ritchie there, top boy, was with United for a few years. Great to talk about his career too. We get so many ex-players sometimes on to comment on the current crop when really, you know, we harp on about the history of Manchester United. Great to hear the stories from some of those guys and great to see that time back in 1990. And he mentioned the one for Brighton as well, didn't he, where he was happily cheering in front of Dave Sexton. Lovely stuff there from Andy Ritchie. This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Next up, we're going to be hearing from Paul Rachupka.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, it's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. We've got plenty coming up on our fan show special here on our Sunday evenings. We do love these Sunday evenings here on Love Sport. Right now, it's all about the Red Devils, and we're going to catch up now with ex-Manchester United goalkeeper Paul Rachupka. The reason we're doing this is because we are in a winter break, of course, and one of the earlier winter breaks I can recall Manchester United taking was all the way back in the early noughties. That was a season they didn't take part in the FA Cup, of course. It caused all kinds of controversy. No one really now delves into the reasons behind that, and primarily it was because the FA wanted United to represent themselves on the global stage for the FIFA, the inaugural FIFA World Club Championship, as it was then called. England were in the midst of an epic 2006 World Cup bid. We know what happened there. It didn't happen. Of course it didn't. United didn't take part in the FA Cup. They went and played in what eventually really was a bit of a damp squib over in Rio, but ultimately enjoyed a nice sunny winter break over on the beaches of Copacabana and Ipanema, and came back when title challengers hadn't really maintained any sort of pressure on them and effectively sauntered to a second successive Premier League title. But Paul recounts that winter break. He recounts being called up to the team to go and travel to Rio, and what a wonderful time it was.
Yeah, it was for me. I didn't find out till the 31st, so I found out on New Year's Eve that I was going. So I literally got a phone call because we'd been given Christmas off. The under-19s had been given 2 weeks off, and I got a phone call off the goalie coach, Tony Cohen, goes, you need to be at training tomorrow morning. And then it's like, he phoned me that morning going, you need to come in training. And I was late for training. I was like 5 minutes late, so I've got my kit on, and I've all the lads are warming up, and I'm like to come out, and the boss has called me over, like, and you only get called over the boss if you're in trouble. So he's done it like that on purpose. Literally all the lads are stretching on the side and he's there going, why are you late? I'm like, sorry boss, I only got a call like 20 minutes ago. He goes, you should have been here on time, and like grilling me, and all the lads are laughing behind me. He goes, right, you're in the squad for Brazil, you come in. Okay, yeah, we're flying on the second, so don't go out tonight because it's New Year's Eve. Whatever you do, don't go out, don't tell anyone, but you're going to be on that plane and you're going to be away for at least, you know, 2 weeks. It's like, oh wow, that's how quickly it changed. You come home, you tell your family, and you're like, I'm going to Brazil for a couple of weeks, and they're like, you are? Really? That's how it, you know, it all happens. And say to be around them all the time around the hotel, we had Danny Higginbottom, Ronnie Warwick, kind of, I knew John Greening, but they were quite a few years older than me, so I kind of did that. But Ray van der Gaal was brilliant in terms of, you know, he'd always look after me. I remember him being double the age of me. And just like going, I hope I can dive around like him when I'm 36. That'd be brilliant. And he really helped me through with it all. But say it was a fantastic experience, but it wasn't something that was expected. It just came out of absolutely nowhere. There was, you know, I think Nick Culkin had gone on loan, and there was another younger lad who was above me who they didn't take. They took me instead, and it was just like, oh wow, this is what it's about. Didn't expect to play, and then, you know, you're 10 minutes from the last game, and you get told, come on, you're coming on, and you didn't expect to come on, and came on. I think I caught the ball once and threw it out to Beckham, and that was it. That was my debut, done and dusted. And it was miles away from Manchester. It was no one was there or anything. You got 80,000 screaming Brazilians just bouncing around, and literally the pitch is vibrating, and it's just like, oh, this is first team football. And getting a private jet and fly home after the game, it was like, you know, this is life. So you don't kind of, it was one thing after another. I think we were on like a 737 to ourselves with 50 seats on it, and this was like, you know, we're flying back to go back into the Premier League, and I was going back to play for the B team against Halifax on the Saturday or something. So I played 90 minutes like 2 days later at the Cliff, and I think the game had been arranged just for me, just to get me back in the real world. And you know, you go from that extreme to being with them, everything's done, you're in a 5-star hotel, like you're on the beach, but you're, you know, there's paparazzi everywhere, 80,000, yeah, there's 100 people back at the Cliff, and you're playing against, I think it was Halifax, in a B team game, and it's miserable cold whenever it was, January morning. So, yeah, it was from one extreme to the other.
One extreme to the other, from Rio to Halifax. That is quite the story there from Paul Rychubka. We're going to be hearing more from him on this, the Manchester United Fan Show, coming up next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Before the break, we were hearing from Paul Rychubka, who was recounting the time he flew out with the team, surprisingly so for him, to Rio for that inaugural FIFA World Club Championship. It came at a time, of course, when Peter Schmeichel had moved on from the club after that emphatic treble season. And basically, there was a Peter Schmeichel-shaped hole in Manchester United's backline. Yes, Mark Bosnich came in. Yes, the likes of Massimo Taibbi came in. Eventually, Fabian Barthez came in. Raymond van der Hau was always there waiting in the wings. But Paul Rychubka was an up-and-coming goalkeeper at the time, and we put to him the theory behind him staying at Manchester United and whether he thought he was actually going to be able to succeed the Great Dane.
Yeah, definitely something I always, you know, believed in, you know, was my goal, and to play for the first team, you know, was one of those goals coming true. So I think what people don't realise was I was training with that squad of players from 15, so it was, we didn't have full-time goalkeeper coaches at the academies. It was just going in one day a week to get your specialist training. And to, I got invited to go in on a Monday morning. So I got Monday morning off school, and I'd go and train with the goalies. And then I remember one time at Christmas, all the apprentices had gone home, and I'd gone in to train, and they needed extra keepers to do shooting. So I ended up going over to do crossing and finishing practice, and I ended up playing in 11v11 shape. And it was that era of, you know, you had Beckham, Scholes, the class of 92, Giggs. So I think the four strikers were Solskjaer, Teddy Sheringham, Cole and York. And that was like, you know, you're going in goal and they're trying to score past you all the time. And it was, I loved it, loved every single minute of it. Then I'd finished training there and then going to school with my friends. And they're like, what have you been doing? And I was like, well, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. And there was no phones with camera phones or, you know, there was no way to prove that I'd done that, to tell people. And then a completely different life growing up. So I had my school life and I had my football life, and they never really crossed. No one ever knew really what was going on. And I wasn't really one to elaborate on it and go around shouting about it. And that was just the way it was. And then when I made my debut at 18, people were like, oh, wait a minute, he probably was telling the truth of what he was doing. When I was at school, my friends were like, oh, wow, you actually were doing that. And
so people actually genuinely thought that you were telling fibs, that you were lying about the fact that you were at Manchester United playing against these players?
Well, no one ever knew. No one ever saw me there. None of, like, it was, there was no record of it. Because when I was at school, I wasn't playing in the B team. I get the odd day off now to go and sit on the bench for the youth team. But there was no real record of me playing there unless you picked up a programme and I might have had my name as a sub on the bench. You know, there was no website to go on to see. Or, you know, this is back in, you know, 96, 97. it was kind of amazing for me, but I didn't know any different. That was just what would happen. And so it was just a great experience that I was around, you know, them all the time, learning from them. And like, you're going in goal and like Solskjaer shooting, and you know it's going in one corner or the other, so you've got like a 50-50 chance of getting it right. You're still not going to save it, but you've got a chance of going the right way. But it was a great upbringing for me, and say I loved every minute of it. It was very much, you know, I was kind of on my own going through that, and you couldn't really share it with anyone until it happened later. So
did you face a Beckham free kick?
Well, being the youngest, you, in that environment, they have, you know, I'd always be the youngest. So it'd be, right, who's youngest? And it'd be me. He goes, right, you go on goal. So it's not only him practicing his free kicks at the end, I'd be in goal. Or it was the change in philosophy. Lads would stay out and practice. That was all about that team. They'd go out and do stuff. So, you know, it might be Gary Neville crossing balls in for the strikers to finish. And you go, right, we need a keeper. It'd be me. You know, we need to do this. I want to practice my penalties. It needs to be me. We need a keeper. And someone would just look at me and I'd go, like, yeah, no problem. And I'd go in goal and it was like great fun. I'd get a phone call Sunday morning. Can you come and train? We need a keeper. And I'd be like, yeah, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Great. And then you'd have like a 3v3, 4v4 with the subs that hadn't played on the Saturday. And then go and get bacon butties with them afterwards. And you'd be like, oh. Yeah, this is fantastic. So I remember one day when I got selected in the squad, they put it down to 16. I think it was a Champions League game, and I was on the bench. So 16 players, you play 8v8 in the five-a-side, and they made the keeper as the captain, so you had to take your first pick. So they were all looking at me going, who are you going to pick first out of that team? So you've got a choice of all those players. You've got like Yap Stam looking at you, you've got Roy Keane looking at you, you've got Paul Scholes, who do you pick first?
What did you go for?
Keane.
Yeah, he had to. As soon as you said Roy Keane's name.
So, I think the last pick was probably Teddy Sheringham. Yeah, you're thinking that he was the last pick.
School. It's not quite the same, is it? Do you know what I think? I think of that, and no disrespect to Roy Keane, but I remember what the five, like, certain players were brilliant in five-a-sides, and there would be certain players that were better in a five-a-side than 11-a-side, and vice versa. Certain players, no offence to Roy Keane, I wouldn't have him as one of the better ones in a five-a-side because of the way in which he plays. But I guess you have to pick him first. Being the character that he is, you absolutely have to pick him first. I want to ask you about that time where, I guess because you've been at so many different clubs now and you've seen lots of different mentalities, lots of different cultures, of course, that was such a successful team. Could you see a huge difference from that culture to some of the ones you were at later, the likes of, using, say, Oldham as an example, just because there's quite a difference between the two, could you see a big difference in terms of culture?
I think what Sir Alex did, and this is my point of view, that every day was a match day, and it would be every day. But an easy day, you'd only play for, say, 20 minutes. But that would be as quick as you play on a Saturday. There was no difference in tempo. But a longer day, you might play for 90 minutes. You know, on a Thursday and you're going through a train, it might be 90 minutes, but the tempo would be at match pace. Or if not, quicker, because you've got two very good teams playing against each other. So it'd be like playing in a game at the top of the Premier League every single day. At that tempo, that's what they play at. I didn't realise that because I didn't know any different until I left. And then when we went to Charlton, it was very much relaxed and everyone would turn up on a Saturday and give 120%. You know, they'd go for 90 minutes full on out and then they'd take all week to recover. And at United, it would be right. The lads who played in a match would get one day chill out recovery. They're still in doing recovery when everyone else I knew was having the day off. And the other subs would be at it at match pace and you'd be doing that week on week, 30, 40 days in a row. And because I didn't know any different, that was what I was used to doing. When I went to other clubs, there was never that intensity. There was never that drive to work constantly like that. And it was a bit of a shock to the system in terms of how you do that and how you kind of take your foot off the gas and then put it back on again for a match day. I still don't really get.
Paul Tripka there speaking to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Myself and Richard Lee caught up with Paul about his career at Manchester United. Great to hear those stories and the fact that his classmates at school didn't actually believe that he was a Manchester United player. Extraordinary stuff there. Eventually, of course, that was before the days of camera phones and social media, so he had no way of proving it. He did tell us one more great story. Of course, he was with the club until 2004, oversaw some brilliant goalkeepers at the time. One of those, Fabian Barthez. Here is what he had to say.
The funny story with Fabian is that he nearly let me drive his Ferrari. And I was in, like, I just passed my test. I got a 1 litre Corsa. And he's with Adidas. Now, Adidas is in Stockport. Their HQ's in Stockport. And he needed some boots. It's like on a Tuesday, and I think he needed the boots sorting and gloves sorting for Saturday. He's like, do you know where it is? And I was like, yeah, I'll take you. Do you want to come in my car? He's like, no, we'll go in his car. And just about to get in his car, and the Adidas guy turned up, and he goes, oh, sorry, mate, I was stuck in traffic. I should have been here ages ago. But I'll take him now, and didn't end up driving his car. I was like devastated.
Oh no.
So it was like, oh, I'm so close. This is just brilliant. Not only was I like driving a Ferrari, I was going to Adidas to get loads of free gear, and it's like as a 17-year-old kid, it was just like, oh, this is brilliant. But Fabian was a lot more cool and calm, very modern for his time, in terms of being good with his feet, wanting to play with his feet, accepting the ball at the back. And Schmeichel was very good with his distribution, but I think Barthez had that kind of knuckleball to a winger, or someone that got there with that distribution that was very accurate, very quick, and could do the counter attack. So they're both very different, and they both kept goal very different, and it was good to see that on a live or a reel, to be part of it and to study both of them. So I enjoyed that totally, but Fabian was very much, he'd speak to everyone, he'd get involved in it, whereas Peter, when he was in the room, you knew he was in the room. He just had that presence, he didn't really have to say anything. Two very different ways of engaging your teammates, and say it's nice to take that in.
I mentioned Nick Culkin earlier. You've mentioned him since. A lot of people talk about his stat and the fact that he played one game for United in injury time against Arsenal in the 99-2000 season. One kick, kept a clean sheet. He's got this 100% record. No one talks about your record. You played for United three times, like you say, those 7 minutes against South Melbourne. You played against Watford in the League Cup. You came on for Raymond van der Hauwe when he was sent off. You faced a penalty, your first shot in English football. That was blasted over by Tommy Mooney. And then you got the full 90 minutes against Leicester in the Premier League. So a combined number of 103 minutes. You didn't concede a single goal for Manchester United in that time, a 100% record.
It was funny because that debut game, we played Leicester at home, and kind of knew I was playing. I got told quite early doors I was playing in that game, but we didn't actually score, I think, till the 89th minute and 91st minute to win that game. And it was just like the longest game ever in terms of playing at Old Trafford, thinking we've got to beat these, and can't concede a goal, and being in goal, that nervous energy, it's bad enough in the bigger games, but once that those final goals went in, it was a nice, easy day at the park where you tune up at half time and you can just enjoy yourself. So it was I'm very proud of that record, and something I worked very hard for, and it's something I always thought when I was at the club, even from 10, that was they were my targets, to continuously play for every team and keep doing well, and when you reach those goals, it is fantastic. And it was disappointing that I couldn't stay and make it the number one shirt, but it would have been an impossible job just given the way goalkeeping was at that time, I think.
Top stuff that. Paul Rachupka, former Manchester United goalkeeper, just regaling us with a whole load of tales there, from hoping to take over from Peter Schmeichel, from nearly getting a chance to ride in Fabian Barthez's Ferrari. Didn't work out for him on that occasion, but he still seems to be doing quite well in terms of free gloves, had it not been for Schmeichel or Barthez. So every cloud and all that. Great story as well about the FIFA World Club Championship. Didn't know he was going to be going to Rio, but got a great opportunity there to join the ranks and played in the only game that Manchester United won in that tournament, 2-0 against South Melbourne. So well done, Paul Rachubka. This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Next up, we're going to be hearing from Kelvin McKenzie. He was speaking on a Weekend Breakfast yesterday about the news that Manchester United have accused the Sun newspaper, of course, Kelvin, a previous editor of The Sun, of receiving an advance notice of that intended attack on the house of Ed Woodward just a couple of weeks ago.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We've got about 12 minutes to go before we move on to Sheffield United here on our Sunday Night Fan Show special on Love Sport. I'm with you through to 11 p.m. And just to finish on United, the news did come out a couple of days ago that United have made a complaint to IPSO, that's the Independent Press Standards Organisation, about the attack on Ed Woodward's home a couple of days ago. United came out and released the following statement and said the club believes that the Sun newspaper had received advance notice of the intended attack, which included criminal damage and intent to intimidate, and that the journalist was present as it happened. The quality of the images accompanying the story indicate that a photographer was also present. Not only did the journalist fail to discharge the basic duty of a responsible member of society to report an impending crime and avert potential danger and criminal damage, his presence both encouraged and rewarded the perpetrators. Now, The Sun have responded to the statement and said that it condemns fully the attack on Mr. Woodward's home and that it was happy to cooperate fully with any police inquiry. Kelvin McKenzie, ex-editor of The Sun, of course, was speaking on Weekend Breakfast yesterday to Ewan Thomas and Paul Mortimer, and he basically gave an outline of the tip-offs, the tips that The Sun received day in, day out. He also gave his verdict on how United's complaint might pan out.
Well, the situation is, if I just explain to you how the Sun news desk works, they are swamped, literally swamped, every day with tips of various kinds. You know, my plumber is having it away with the lady at number 28. There's going to be a big kickoff between two sets of schoolboys outside the school here, there and everywhere. And we take this particular case, they would have said there's going to be a big protest outside the home of the Manchester United chief executive. They have no more idea than the man in the moon, than you, me, or anybody, that these things are actually taking place or going to take place. They turn up there, and instead of it being a protest, it turns out to be dangerous and criminal, right? There are people that deal with that, and they're called the police. And so, but the idea that the Sun photographer or reporter would have known that either of those were true is completely wrong. And what it really shows from Manchester United is that they have had, and I understand this, absolutely understand this, two things. One, what they are having a nightmare season and are massively sensitive about all forms of PR. Secondly, yes, I totally agree. It must have been phenomenally frightening. Actually, they weren't there that night, I don't think, the Woodward family, for anybody inside that house with flares going off and a load of Manchester United disgruntled fans outside. I do understand that. But it, first of all, A, the Sun didn't know it was going to happen. They were tipped off it was going to happen. They get all kinds of tips. Mm. They got a tip last year, for instance, I could tell you this, that I happen to know it, that Philip Schofield was gay. Right? All right. Did they run that? No, they didn't, right? Did they investigate it? They didn't bother. There's all kinds of aspects to the Sun newsroom life which are quite extraordinary. And if you published all the tips and didn't publish all the stories, you'd probably be selling 20 million a day, not a million.
Kelvin,
a day.
Can I ask then, as you said, you know, they get the tip and the reporter turns up. Very quickly, he or she realises what's going on. What's their responsibility then, to call the police or to keep filming or to keep recording? And also, if you live in a quiet residential place and this commotion is happening, it must be terrifying for the neighbours around there as well. And that's why I kind of think, well, who is responsible for actually letting the police know?
Right, well, I mean, that's the main point, right? If it happened on my estate, right, and there was a protest going on, actually, it's more likely to be going on outside my house, actually, to be honest. if it was going on two places, right, I would have called the cops straight away. Actually, the police, the reporter's job is to report. It's the first rough draft of history. The first job of the photographer, unfortunately, is to take a picture. Right now, I'm not saying that their second job is not to call the cops, but actually, there've been enough people in that area with this row going on. I don't know how big the row was. Let's say it was pretty massive, and with flares going off and God knows what, it would have been pretty frightening. What they really should be concentrating on, Manchester United, is finding out who did this and kicking them out of the club, or pursuing a private prosecution against the fans who did this. If the police, for whatever reason, do you know how many of the demonstrators have been arrested? I presume nobody has, yeah. Right? I presume nobody has, and under those circumstances, they look round for somebody to blame. And honestly, I don't know Mr. Woodward. I mean, the idea that he is the bad guy for Manchester United when he turns out to be an accountant, but he's a massive hate figure, and then he gets caught up in this, and then they go to Ipsos. They are going to lose. I don't know why they're doing it. They're simply doing it for publicity and PR.
That was Kelvin McKenzie there, one-time editor of The Sun, speaking on Love Sport Weekend Breakfast yesterday with Paul Mortimer and Ewan Thomas, just about that news that United have made a complaint to Ipso about The Sun, suggesting that they received a tip-off on the attack on Ed Woodward's house. I'm sure that story will rumble on for the next few days or so. We are nearly at the end of the Manchester United Fan Show, and it's becoming a bit of a thing that we head over to producer Paddy for the final 5 minutes of the show, just to gauge his reaction on Manchester United as things stand. The Paddy part is what I'm going to hastily name it right off the bat. Paddy, come on. I'm going to name a few names to you now. I'm going to give you a few names and see what you think of them. Today, Josh King has come out, hasn't he, and spoken about his potential move to Manchester United and the fact that that might have happened. And he said, you know, I was a Manchester United. It was my dream to play for Manchester United. It did not happen. I made the choice and I left. When you hear you're connected to United and a bid comes in and the feelings you had as a 16-year-old boy come back to you, it would have been a dream come true. He's saying that now as a Bournemouth player.
Yeah, well, you look at it. Isn't that the attitude that we've been lacking for how many years? You know, with the transfers over the last few years, we didn't have players coming in. They were coming in for the pay salaries more. So Bruno Fernandes came in with that same attitude. Odion Ighalo has been coming in with that attitude. And we need a striker. We need a backup to Marcus Rashford. I presume Ighalo is going to go back to China at the end of this season, unless he proves to have a great season. He ended up scoring, 10 goals? But yeah, that's what you want. And Josh King obviously has an association with United. So why not bring him back? And he scored that goal against us in, late last year, November? When the Bournemouth beat us 2-1. Yeah, it was horrible. But, you know, there you go.
Okay, so a couple of others. Jack Grealish, again, being linked. Listen, we're in a winter break, so every name under the sun is going to be linked. We're hearing reports that apparently personal terms have been agreed with Jack Grealish. Declan Rice is another one as well. West Ham have offered renewed hope for United that Declan Rice might be achievable this summer.
Can you tell me the question, or tell me the answer, what's so special about Declan Rice? I haven't seen that in any of his West Ham performances of recent.
I like Declan Rice a lot. I like him probably because he's homegrown. I think he does basics. If I was going to compare him to any Manchester United player of recent times, you'd probably say a Michael Carrick, and we know how good Michael Carrick was for the club. Sometimes you just need a midfielder there who is going to sit and do a job. People call them crabs. People say they pass sideways. Declan Rice is actually shouldering a hell of a lot more responsibility at West Ham at the moment, so it isn't so much that player. You'd like to think that would improve him as a player. I'm slightly concerned about how far he's going to have to push himself at West Ham at the moment, but Declan Rice and Jack Grealish, two additions, in my opinion, I'd love to see.
Well, Jack Grealish, definitely, anyway. Again, I'll harp back to Bruno Fernandes. He's the first player in a long time that had confidence to shoot from anywhere. When was the last time you could remember a United player shooting like that? Especially, remember in Van Gaal's season, it was always trying to walk the ball into the box. I mean, we had the likes of Di Maria that season, who has a hell of a right foot in him. Why wasn't left he shooting? Foot. Oh, left foot, sorry, yeah. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head, but left foot on him. Why wasn't he trying from outside the box? You know, why was players walking into the box with the ball? And that's what you need. We need confidence, and Bruno Fernandes showed that against Wolves. Jack Grealish has a hell of a foot in him as well. I'm not going to name the foot in case I get it wrong there again, but that's what we need. We need players with their own confidence as well. But then people will harp back to, well, if United are not playing well, surely the players' confidence will go down. And that's what I've heard from several players or several fans on Bruno Fernandes. Will his confidence go down if the results keep kind of staggering, you know, if will that bring down his performances, and will he leave at the end of the summer or the end of the next season known as a failure at the club? So you just have to be careful with these players, bringing them in. You know, I think Ole is the best player to get the best out of those young players as well, and that's what we need. And even though Odion Ighalo is what, 30, we still need that experience. So I know we're going for a youngster kind of approach in the team, Matt. But, you know, are these the right players to be going after for United? Do they suit the style of Ole's play? I think they do.
Okay. In Ole we trust?
Yeah, in Ole we trust.
Lovely stuff. Paddy, we will be back with you next Sunday at around 20:48. I say we might come a bit earlier next time. This has been the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.